Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the one, the only original Monday Night Scarycast. I'm Dr. John Stamey, and it is a true pleasure to be here tonight with everybody. First of all, take care of some business here. This coming weekend, June 17th, is the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference, Burnsville Town Center, Burnsville, North Carolina, just north of Asheville. There's a ton of interest. People are so excited. The word has really gotten out. It has been spread by a lot of people, including by Robin McRae and all the Bigfoot groups. So we're going to have a great conference. Professor Mulder is there. We're going to be talking about radionics. We got John, Reverend John Dixon, Tennessee MUFON investigator, talking about the connection between Bigfoot and UFOs. And, of course, Robin will be there talking. Christian McLeod will be there. We got a lot of great people. So it's going to be a great amount of fun. Be there. Your tickets, you can get them at ncbigfootconference.com or buy them at the door. So I will look forward to seeing everybody there. Now, we have a great guest because here's what happens. I love telling the truth. I was at the Withville UFO Festival this weekend, which I dearly love. I think that is a great conference. And so about 12 o'clock, I'm sitting there promoting the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference, and all of a sudden some dude comes walking up. I think he had on a hat, and he had on this multi-lighted badge that had his name on it. And he said, "Hey, you remember me?" And of course, I didn't remember anything. I barely remember Withville. But anyway, after about a minute, I remembered him, and we had a great conversation last year, and it has exploded in many ways ever since the Withville UFO Conference. Our guest tonight is going to be introduced once I introduce our esteemed co-hosts, the Surgeon General of Scarycast from the Midlands of South Carolina, one of the finest surgeons that I know, and one of the best people that I know for sure, Dr. Trey Dunaway. How you doing tonight, Trey?
I'm doing fine, John. Happy to be here with you.
Boy, we're glad you're here tonight, too. Now, from Augusta, Georgia, one of the most haunted towns in America, and a beautiful town, too, the home of the Masters Golf Tournament, the one and only Chris Chastain. How are you doing tonight, Chris?
Evening, John. Howdy to all the paranormal fans. Happy to be here on my favorite night of the week.
That's right. It is your favorite night of the week. I've only talked to you, I think, three times today. So as we get ready for your favorite night, it's great. We're very, very glad to have you here. And Robin McRae will be with us. She had a momentary thing to take care of, and so she will be with us momentarily. Tonight is the one, the only Kobe Ratliff. Kobe is from Abingdon, Virginia, a town that I actually know very well. I used to work for Food City. KVAT Foods, which is headquartered, or I assume it still is headquartered, in Abingdon, Virginia. It's a beautiful town. There are a lot of great people there. And then Kobe's there, and he just tops them all. Kobe, good evening, and how are you doing tonight?
Wonderful, Shell. Still my true believer?
Pardon?
Wonderful, Shell. To all my true believers out there.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of true believers. And we're glad to have you here. All right, you and I were talking to today. I was looking for a really good guest, and I said, you know, we've discussed one evening already the topic of electronics and spirituality, and you've built some machines. You're kind of a handcrafted, you're an electrical engineer. You build things, and that's what I like, people that get their hands dirty. Dr. Trey Dunaway gets inside people's bodies and saves their lives and pulls out bad things and gets the good things all tidied up. So I like people that that really get into it. So that's what you do on a daily basis. And, in fact, one of your specialties is musical electronics. Is that right?
That's right. A background in electronic music, synthesizer design, field recording, et cetera.
Yeah, that's great. All right, now, I wanted you to start talking. You've got a great list of topics, and you put a lot of things together that I don't believe I've ever heard put together before. It's going to be a bit of a history lesson, a bit of an electronics lesson, and a bit of a philosophy and spirituality lecture. So first of all, get going and start with this little overview of electronics and spirituality for us.
All right. Well, I can start briefly with my background, which I would describe myself as someone with a foot in the sciences and a foot in the humanities. As far as sciences go, biology and electrical engineering, I would consider those my forte, and philosophy and comparative religion, and art as far as humanities, and an interest in the paranormal and strange phenomena always played a huge role in my life. And getting into what we were discussing earlier, specifically radionics,
okay. And I see and I see the Queen of Scarycast has joined us. Hey, Ms. Robin McRae, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Sorry I'm late, guys. I've been trying to get on, and it just was not letting me.
Well, we're glad. You know what? You're one of those people, you will try until you succeed, and that's what we like about you. So we're glad you're
well,
here.
Well, I think
all right.
Me.
All right, and we've got Kobe Ratliff tonight. Kobe, would you start over, go two sentences back, so that Robin can kind of catch a little bit of what you had just discussed?
Yeah, I was giving a general overview of my background in both the sciences and humanities. I have a foot in two worlds, as I like to say. My science background is in electrical engineering and as well as some biology. And my humanities background is in philosophy, comparative religion, art, and literature.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And you're going to start, I think your first topic down this rabbit hole tonight is William Burroughs. Is that correct?
That's right. So the beat writers of the 50s were really my segue into literature as a teenager. Likes of William Burroughs, Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac. I'm sure most of you are at least marginally familiar with those names. And Burroughs always stood out to me because he had this lifelong flirtation with the paranormal.
Right. They were absolutely the intelligentsia of San Francisco back in the heyday. This was right after what's his name? I wrote a story about him right after editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. God, I can't remember his name. This is terrible. But anyway, it'll come to me in a minute. But yeah, they really had it going on back then in the late 1800s and 1900s up through 1960. And so please continue.
That's right. There was I'd like to say that there was a strong astral residue of a lot of these ideas seeping in pop culture at the time, and I think that perfectly. And he was doing writer's workshops in the late 50s and 60s, and it was through discovering one of these lectures that I was introduced to radionics called The Technology of Wishing, and you can find it in two parts on YouTube. And he talked about a machine that he had acquired through a friend of his, and they were using it in, I believe, Kansas to combat a corn borer problem. From a great distance away, it may have been well over 100 miles, but they were using these radionics machines to target pests and parasites that were hurting crops. And he makes this great joke in this lecture where he says if it could kill a corn borer, it could easily kill a human.
Well, the United States
something
Department
you can
of Agriculture.
After.
Well, Kobe, I can tell you the United States Department of Agriculture certainly agreed that it did help kill corn borers. It really did, and there are several reports. There's a book that I'm going to have out in a preprint this weekend, and it's going to have that exact article that will list a lot of those things, including what the United States Department of Agriculture said about this amazingly crazy sending device. It's kind of like a small radio transmitter, actually.
Yeah, very interesting, especially given that we had not discussed the corn borer documents before this podcast began.
Right, I'm familiar with them. And
so I'm glad we have some background and source to build on.
Seems like you and I have a lot of overlap here. We really do. Please continue.
Oh, absolutely. So being the person I am, and ever since I was a kid, my electrical engineering skills roamed into basically just exploration in discarded consumer electronics. I always wanted to understand how these things work, their mechanics were. So I started searching for schematics and was puzzled to find that the internals of radionics machines aren't following any conventional electrical engineering principles, which has led me to theorize that the mechanic behind making these things work isn't exactly electrical, but it's working with subtle energy. And William Burroughs was all about this. Another great influence of his was, one moment, an Australian thinker, Wilhelm Reich, who claimed to have discovered an energy called orgone, which is another one of these speculated invisible fields. And he was a student of Sigmund Freud, who we know is always lurking in the corners and making everything about sex. Everything is a phallus to Freud. So, of course, Wilhelm Reich, his student, followed that to its conclusion and said, well, this energy field must be related to the human orgasm in some way or another.
It's interesting.
And, incredibly so. And
the show's taking a big turn now.
Robin, I'm going to say something. These guys were, you look at what they said back then. They were a little whack, but they were very interesting. I mean, they were very interesting.
Now it's a party out here.
I know, and they were talking about this orgonite, and Kobe, tell us what orgonite is, because that's the material that Wilhelm Reich was seemed to be very interested in, correct?
Yes, that's right. So orgonite
used
is
used a lot in paranormal work.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People pay
right,
big bucks for it.
All right, Kobe, tell us about orgonite, and then I'm going to ask Robin to tell us what she knows about it from the paranormal research angle. This is great. All right, Kobe, what is orgonite? Orgonite.
Great. The orgonite is a composite of organic and inorganic materials. I know at least two are possibly stone, copper, to form a type of energy vortex to channel the field. And interestingly enough, back to Burroughs, he actually had what's called a orgone accumulator in his writing office, which looked like just a large aluminum box with a chair in it, and apparently where a lot of his ideas were coming from was meditating in this thing. And I think Bob Dylan and maybe a few other figures in pop culture own these as well.
So what you're saying is that they're sitting in a metal chair in this box containing orgonite, and they are meditating and getting these grand ideas. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Which is claimed to be the inspiration for a lot.
Okay, now Robin, if I wanted to buy some orgonite, what would I have to pay for a bag of orgonite?
Well, the orgonites that like we use in the paranormal field, they generally have them shaped up like in the form of, it looks like a pyramid, to be honest with you. And you can see the copper pieces go in it, and you can see all the different kinds of crystals that are used in it, and all of these other particles, exactly like what Kobe was describing. And they do. They are an energy source. You can tap into them. You can use those to do a great many things. And so if you, depending on the size of, and like I said, they put them in the form of a triangle or a pyramid, you can pay anywhere from $60 to $300 on up. I mean, it just depends on the size of the piece. But for one that is like palm size, that might go up like 4 or 5 inches. I know people that sell them for over $100, and I have seen them up to $500, depending on what is put in it. They're not cheap. They are definitely not cheap. And because they do pull energy, you can push energy in them and use them for things. You can pull energy from them. I mean, it's really astronomical, the what they can do. Do I believe that they had these pieces of orgonite there and they sat around meditating around them? Absolutely. Do I know whether or not these guys were, you know, getting anything legit or if it's just what they were saying? I have no idea. But I will tell you that, you know, a lot of people, I know people that have said that they've used them when meditating. I tell people to be careful because when you meditate, you're in that state where you're open to anything. And anything can come at you, and because you're so open, you know, it's easy to get hurt. But using orgonite, you can use it for a great many things. It is very, very popular in the research field and in a paranormal field.
There you go. And Robin has spoken. Robin, that's brilliant. Thank you.
Not that that means anything.
Thank you for contributing this because, you know, we're all about, again, contributing and trying to increase our body of knowledge. All right, Kobe, that's great. Now, I think the next thing you were going to talk about was EVP, the EVP diode and the crystal radio. Do you mind moving to that? Because I find that very, very interesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess a great place to start with EVP was both our pioneers, Edison and Tesla were both pioneering this field of research. They were the earliest to document hearing anomalous voices and transmissions on their devices. So it really descends from there. Both were interested in building devices to speak to the afterlife. And another thing I'd like to plug briefly on Tesla is that there's a paper that you can find I believe it's called Voices from Mars, where one of his receivers, he had received a strange, almost Morse code-like transmission language. And due to the astronomical layout at this particular time, Mars was fairly close to Earth, and he thought that that could be the only explanation from where these things are coming from. So if you want to look into something that's kind of weird and between two domains of metaphysics and science, coming from a great scientific thinker, certainly check that out. It's a very entertaining read.
You know, and you mentioned that it's a very entertaining read. Nikola Tesla was one of the most respected scientists in the history of the world. And this respected scientist wrote a paper called Voices from Mars. This is like,
and it reads like H.G. Wells. It reads like pulp science fiction. It's brilliant.
And then there's a very famous biologist and his wife who were professors at Duke University, Professor Dunaway, who you did your undergraduate work. And he invented the term ESP, and it was J.B. Rhine. And I was one of the most fortunate people in the world to work with his daughter, Sally Rhinefeather. And to be a great biologist, he was right in the middle of ESP. I mean, we see evidence of great thinkers that are attracted to these are research problems. It's like, what in the world is going on? But they are attracted to this. Dr. Dunaway, do you remember, or did you ever hear of J.B. Rhine when you were an undergraduate at Duke?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was a psych major, so that put me even closer to the action. But by the time I was there, it was well after the Rhine's tenure.
Yeah, but they were pretty famous back then, weren't they?
Oh yeah.
They really were. Okay. And so, Kobe, tell us a little bit about the EVP and the diode and the crystal radio. That's very interesting little nugget in all this.
So when I was mining the history of EVP, which has also become completely baked into popular culture, we have films like White Noise. I discovered one of the earliest researchers, born in 1909, I believe. He lived through the 70s, was Konstantin Radovay. And fortunate for people like me, people of minded toward technology and engineering, he made a lot of his designs for the equipment that he was working on publicly available. So the parts aren't as accessible now as they were then. They're quite dated. But the Radovay diode, which this is going to segue right into crystal radio, because it's basically an inductor, which is simply a coil of wire, and a diode, which is the component that allows power to flow in one direction and not the other, and these are two of the three essential components to a basic crystal radio receiver, simply missing the tuning capacitor. So what's happening in a Radovay diode is you're getting every frequency in the spectrum at once through your diode into your output of your amplifier or your headphones or what have you. And I thought that was a very interesting parallel to the use of white noise in EVP recording. Because it's the same principle
now,
of...
All right. Since we do have a little bit of an expert on EVPs and white noise, Robin, would you like to add a little bit? Because a lot of people who are listening to this might not really know what an EVP is and how white noise is important. And we never discussed this before, but I'm certain you have a good handle on this topic.
Well, I think he's got more of a scientific approach to it than I could ever do. Like, I mean, I can tell you my experiences with him. I mean, your EVPs you're going to get from any type of a device that's going to pick up sounds that you might not hear audible. You know, it's like you already know this, we have spirits in the house. Well, every house you've ever lived in has had spirits, so it's not like it was anything new. And at one point in time, years ago, we had a friend of mine that actually came out and came to the house, and he had an EVP device. And he would sit at my dining room table and simply ask this. It was a little girl that was there. I had seen her. Ask her questions. You know, like, why was she there and what was she looking for? And the EVP device would pick it up, and it looked like a little recorder. is all. And he would play it back, and it was absolutely amazing. You could hear her talking, and she said she was there because she missed her mommy, and she liked my cats. She liked to pet the pretty cats. And, you know, it does. It picks up audible voices that you may not be able to pick up with your eyes. The white noise, I use white noise, but the way I use it is because in that white noise, it blocks things from talking to you. Because I'm telepathic and I mind speak, if I don't want to hear anything or if I don't want to be tracked, because, you know, I have a history with the ETs, if I don't want them to find me, all I do is turn on white noise. For whatever reason, in the paranormal realm, white noise you can hide in. And I've literally tested this where we have had UFOs over the house, and I had experiences where I could hear them trying to talk to me, and I would go outside in the backyard where they could get to me at any given time, and it was like you would see these UFOs above me and all over the place. And there were witnesses of this. I mean, I wasn't out there being crazy or anything by myself. They literally wouldn't find me, but let me turn off the white noise, and it was like flies on poop. I mean, it was there in a heartbeat. You know, so it, just FYI, you can use it. Use the white noise to hide yourself. And I do the same thing. It's like when I go to sleep at night, because everything and its brother, as soon as I relax to go to bed, wants to talk to me and mind speak, I turn on, I don't go to bed unless my TV's on, because in that white noise, they don't find me. I mean, it's just that simple. EVP readings, in my experience, have always been just, you know, for voices and things that want to talk, but it's not where you can hear it with your ears, it's still there on a different spectrum. And these machines,
right,
and the boxes that they meet to do it have no problem picking it up. Our ears can't. It's a completely different spectrum.
Right. I know that I did an investigation at a restaurant in Travelers Rest, South Carolina, and guy brought in an EVP box, and what it did was it went back and forth along the AM band, and we would ask questions like, what spirits are here? And we would get audible answers that seemed to answer our questions. They actually met the Turing test for AI, for artificial intelligence, for intelligence. So, you know, we had 30 people there, and people were watching it. And we had this male that was, he had a fairly young voice, and we were talking to him, and he said, shut up. I said, what do you mean, shut up? He said, go fuck yourself. I'm gone. And this is what a ghost says is an EVP. It was incredible.
Do you remember the EVP we got in Georgia where they called Janice a bitch?
Yes, and I also remember when we were at the Somerville Comic-Con, you, me, and Maestro and Tony Filosi were there, and we were talking about the ghost. What was her? Do you remember her name? She was the first lady She was the first lady hung in South Carolina, and I still got this recording. We recorded it, and she is answering the questions about herself and her life before you guys are, and people were stunned. We would hear this woman's gravelly voice talking to us over the loudspeaker. I mean, it was unbelievable. So, I mean, we've had experiences, personal experiences. Somerville Comic-Con, we had about 60 people listening to us. You remember, there was a crowd there. I mean, there we were. Maestro was stunned. You were stunned. I was stunned. I think Janice was there, too.
Yeah, she was. And Kobe, I have a question for you, and I'm hoping you can answer it. I came outside to do the show tonight because my husband gets up at like 4:30 in the morning. So generally, I do the show in our room, and he'll go out in the living room. Well, he was really tired, so I thought, I'm going to let him sleep. I'll go out. It's beautiful outside. I'll go out and sit on the porch, and I'll do the show. Since I came out here, I've got nothing but the woods around me riddled with eyeshine. So I have a night vision. device that attaches. It is actually not night vision. It's a thermal camera that was sent to me by someone that I worked with before. And so I thought, how fun will that be while I'm sitting out there? I'll see if I can get anything. Now, on this thermal camera, I'm looking in an area, and it's not a Sasquatch or anything like that, but I was just like, while I was listening to you, kind of scanning the area, what do you know about the thermal cameras? Because there is, like, I can't see it with my eyes, but when I look on the thermal camera, in fact, I just took a picture of it, it looks like an apparition of an old woman with a bun on her head, like free-floating in my yard.
Very interesting. I have to say I don't know as much about thermal technology as I do night vision, but I'm assuming it's working on a similar principle of the way, for example, a night vision camera works. Is simply a filter has been taken out of the lens that's filtering, just allowing in part
it's
of the...
It's supposed to get heat signatures.
Right.
Like, I don't know that much about them or how they actually work. I know it picks up a heat signature. What I do know is when it comes to the cryptids, because of their high frequency and energy, it does not always pick them up. I mean, you have a good chance of it if they're not paying attention. If they're actually focused on you, they can block it. So that, you know, I just thought while I was sitting here, I just kind of look around. I'm actually waiting for my possum. He comes up on the porch about this time of night. But I literally just thought I'd look through it, and it looks like an apparition of an old woman. Like, you can almost see her face and everything. It's, like, really creepy. But then when it's not, when I take it down, I can't see her at all.
Fascinating. I think, like, the principle that we're working with that sort of technology is you have to recognize how narrow the spectrum of visual light is that we can actually perceive, and through offering lenses we can actually get a representation of light and forms and masses and frequencies that are either above or below the visual.
Yeah, it's just really crazy. Like, I don't know what is going on. This is bizarre. But, I mean, I wasn't trying to change the subject at all. I was just thought that maybe because of what you do know, you could shed some light on that, because it makes absolutely no sense to me.
Right, well, you know, the common view among fairly uncommon people is that are interested in this sort of thing is that they're vibrating at a much higher frequency than us.
Yeah,
at a much higher frequency
than
tangible matter, right? Well, that's going to be above the spectrum into infrared and ultraviolet. Anything that exists at that frequency that our eyes can't perceive.
Right.
It's definitely unique. Like I said, I mean, I'm getting lots of stuff over here anyway. Like, anything on the ground I already know is the feral cats, but I'm getting a lot of stuff up in the trees and stuff. But it was just really odd because, you know, we're sitting here and we're talking about the white noise and all these other things. And I just, you know, I had it attached to my phone, and it's got its own camera lens and a tripod and all this other stuff. And I've not really gotten a whole lot with it until tonight, but I just thought I'm going to be out here anyway. You know, maybe I'll get lucky and see something. And it's like all of a sudden all these things are popping up now. And see, now I look over there in the same exact spot, and she's not there.
I used to build my own night vision cameras as a kid by modifying just cheap digital cameras. And it was a process as simple as removing a glass infrared filter out of the lens and adding a deck of IR LEDs that you've now made the camera very sensitive to that spectrum of light specifically.
Yeah, for anybody out there, send organized. I don't know what's going on here. We need organized here.
we'll talk about organized for sure. I'd like to stop everything and say thank you, Transamerica Life Insurance Corporation, for keeping us on the air. Transamerica, if you need life insurance, we have insured millions of people successfully, and we have protected families since 1908. So thank you, Transamerica, for being an integral part of ScaryCast. We don't know what to do. All right, we are returning now to ScaryCast. We're taking over your television set, like they used to say on the Outer Limits. And first of all, I'd like to have a question from Chris Chastain for our guest, and then one from our Surgeon General, Dr. Trey Dunaway. So, Chris, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Well, first off, I'm trying to be a copycat. I'm out here with my night vision binoculars trying to see anything, but I don't live at phenomenon paranormal farm like Robin does. But I do have a question, though. I wanted to go back to the organite, you know, for Kobe. What kind of things can you do with the organite? I mean, is this something that you have? Do you have these around your house, or what kind of experience have you had with them? Because I'm kind of interested. I was looking them up while we were talking, and they're actually quite pretty, and they're fascinating.
They are very beautiful. My experience thus far has simply been from a scientific and engineering perspective, as well as it sort of segues into my interest in morphogenetic fields and the work of Rupert Sheldrake. I think that these are very similar and related ideas. So, unfortunately, I don't have the firsthand in the field experience with organite quite yet, although I have been rather tempted seeing these pictures of Burroughs and his organ accumulator to take a day trip to Home Depot and piece one together myself and see what kind of great insights I could get.
Wow.
Very
okay.
Fascinating.
Well,
sure.
Well, then, do you have another question for him, Chris?
I did, and then it just flew right out of my head. So, with the electro voice phenomenon, I knew what it was, but I didn't know what the acronym was. Have you had any? Have you ever been, you know, kind of playing around with those and had a creepy encounter, kind of like what John and Robin were talking about? And I'm just curious.
Oh,
you haven't? I don't know.
I have. That is something I can talk about. When I was obsessively building these things quite recently, maybe 6 months ago, and experimenting with different schematics and swapping in parts. I have, being an electrical engineer, I have a lot of stuff to play with on hand, many different inductors and capacitors and diodes. And one night I was using a rather large coil and substituted that for the inductor in a Faraday diode. And I was scanning my house with it, and the first thing, you know, if you're connecting the coil to an amplifier and listening to it, is you're just bombarded by electrical hum from electronic pollution in the EMF spectrum. But so I didn't hear anything, but my chandeliers started to shake and vibrate, and the chains that connected the switches in my overhead lighting were swaying back and forth.
Oh.
And at that point, it sort of solidified, because, you know, I know that I wasn't transmitting an electromagnetic field that could cause, you know, something to move or electronics to bug out, that I was simply tuning into something. And it was it wasn't alarming, but it really just solidified my my belief in Radove. I think that he was on to a lot of very interesting stuff, and it's something that I'm hoping to explore a lot more with some devices I'm working on.
Okay. All right. That's great.
Good, that's cool.
Good question, Chris. Dr. Trey, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I've never heard of Organite, and I'm looking it up, and it looks like it's a composite material with piezoelectric crystals and resin is carbon. It says it's organic and inorganic, and then it said you can make some with fiberglass is the organic part, but fiberglass doesn't have carbon, so I don't really understand how you can do that. So what exactly does Organite do for people?
There's quite a bit of varied use and theories for many people from meditation, as we were discussing earlier, to I've seen them being used in radionics machines as a type of subtle energy amplifier, which is a very interesting concept. I think fundamentally what it is when you take these materials and when they're composited in the right gradient and in a very specific way, that it's kind of opening a channel for this pre-existing subtle energy orgone field that Reich theorized to the libido, which I think is analogous to biology.
But
is it
a transmitter? Is it a receiver? It's certainly there are piezoelectric properties that are established and absolutely
right.
Real. That's how you put crystals under mechanical pressure and it creates an electrical charge because that's the way the mineral is. But what do you use it for in your electronic boxes?
I haven't
or do you use it
in my own work. It's just another potentiality for me.
Okay. So do you construct transmitters, receivers? What is it you build?
Both radio transmitters, radio receivers. Otherwise, I'm trying to think of something I haven't really dabbled in. I build, is this just pertaining to paranormal or just like a broad oversight of the type of things I'm interested in? Or?
Well, if it's easier, we'll just talk about paranormal. So what type of frequencies do you transmit or receive with a paranormal device, either a receiver or a transmitter?
Okay, so I'm working, as far as paranormal goes, I'm working with sensors and receivers. So the Radove diode that I was talking about, that is a receiver. That's basically in a coiled antenna attached directly to an output, directly to an amplifier or a set of headphones, and it's listening into the radio spectrum.
Okay. And what is it, high frequency, low frequency? What type of bandwidth is it? Compare it to AM or FM transmission or X-ray. Is it above, below? What kind of bandwidth are you looking for?
It's the entire spectrum of AM.
Of AM?
Yes, from VLF, very low frequency, which you can actually listen to lightning and weather phenomena, to
Right.
Very high frequency, which is anything from number stations to shortwave to military communication. But there's a Rockaway diode is not tuned into a specific frequency, so it's sort of a I was comparing it to white noise because it's every frequency firing at once.
So it's tuned into an omni frequencies, I guess, would be
That's
one
right,
way of putting
yeah.
it. And when you tune into these omni frequencies, what I mean, obviously you can hear lightning, you can hear static, you can hear what do you hear that tells you this is the type of signal you're looking for and listening to?
Well, the first thing to do when you construct a Rockaway diode is to enclose it in a shielded enclosure. So you want to enclose it
like a Faraday box or something of that
exactly.
nature?
Exactly. Exactly. To use an aluminum enclosure, and that's going to prevent electromagnetic pollution from seeping in and overpowering the type of signals that you're looking for. Yeah. The magic happens is when voices emerge on this, because it otherwise sounds like white noise.
Okay. And when you have now with this Faraday, do you ground that the aluminum
yeah,
box is that grounded so you are eliminating most frequencies that you might be picking up extraneously through an omni receiver.
That's right. So in a way, your body is acting as the capacitor, because if you have a like a metal Faraday box and you ground your circuit to that, and then you're holding it in your hand, and you're acting as the earth.
And will your signals penetrate the Faraday box in order to be picked up by the receiver that's inside? I would think you would be shielded from that as well. Well, whatever it's, I mean, if you have it completely isolated, how can it pick up frequencies?
The mystery of the circuit, where are these voices emerging from? I imagine that it's something like these beings are able to manipulate frequency from inside the circuit itself.
So their presence would be inside your Faraday screen, inside your Faraday box?
Right.
And then you're hearing only sources that are transmitting that are actually inside that Faraday isolated area. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, yeah. So you're basically just building a very still and controlled environment for a radio receiver.
Right, right. And what type of transmissions have you picked up?
Thus far, many voices. Often very distorted and cryptic, but seemingly following the syntax of a language.
Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of people that work in EVP, they process the recordings in computer software to filter and equalize and hone in on specific anomalies.
And I would imagine there are multiple languages that would come through. I mean,
right.
Not all spirits speak English. So do you have any recordings of these transmissions?
I do. I'm onto magnetic tape, which is something I'm very biased toward. I feel like my specialty in taste in electronics is purely analog. I feel like the more digital something becomes, the more nodes that you're opening up, and it sort of convolutes the system. So a lot of the devices I design are very elegant in terms of their functionality, using very simple components, often vintage components.
Okay. And of some of these transmitted messages you've received, have you been able to decipher any so it's understandable to you?
I haven't thus far, no.
Okay.
But, again, I haven't spent much time in the field with these devices.
Right.
I'm not
very interesting.
I wouldn't consider myself a paranormal investigator myself, at least in the sense of being out there in the field, visiting the location and recording data. I'm sort of behind that on the science and engineering side.
And you said you record data. What would that data be?
I was saying, like, specifically, I'm not, like, a field researcher or a field investigator. As far as I'm not traveling to locations and actually recording data, you know, on a haunted location, I'm sort of behind that in the more scientific engineering side of things.
So you build the boxes, but you don't use the boxes.
I test my equipment, of course, but no, I'm not in the field.
Well, very interesting.
Right. And so basically, you, Kobe, are more or less putting these things together and seeing what you can make work. And then once you get something to work, now I've got a number of field investigators that would probably enjoy using these, like Christian McLeod, and I think Matt Delph would. And so we can get some people to test these things. I mean, I just think it's kind of interesting, especially now that the EVP stuff, and you know, because I'm used to those standard AM and FM going back and forth on the dial. I've done that before with a number of people, and we got some pretty good results. But what I'd like to do is I would like for us, and maybe we can go down there and go to Robin's house. Now, Robin, if we come to your house, we're going to have some Key West Sloppy Joes, okay?
I know. I need to make them up for the conference this weekend. There's a way to keep them warm.
Have some beer.
Right, but you know what we need to do is we need to come down there because we know there are two spirits in your house. And Kobe, you know, we could arrange a time to go down there, right, Robin, and we could, you know, see what we could find and record the things that we get. Would you be okay with that if we arrange the time?
Yeah.
With you? Okay, that'd be great. Now, Kobe, is that something that you could, you know, in the moderate to near-term future that you might could come down and we could try this experiment? Would that be okay?
Yes, absolutely. That's something I can swing, and I really want to get these devices into the hands of the right people and into the field and receive feedback. And I want it to be a collaborative project with the people that are actually in the field investigating this phenomena, so I can continue to improve my equipment.
Right.
Really,
okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, John, with your contacts, you could have a whole test kitchen for this. So I think that's a great idea.
Well, yeah, I do too. And Kobe, it's a shame that you won't be there this weekend because you've got to go off on a family vacation. But I've got a number of researchers that I can contact, and we can talk to at least four teams that I know of who will be represented there at the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference. And I think it'll be a lot of fun to try to do that. And I think it would be very constructive and would move forward in what you're doing, especially because you do know the science behind it, and you can explain that to people. And I think that's what they would like to know. They would like to know, well, why does this work? What are we doing? And also, my buddy Ike. Ike is the manager of GameStop in Havelock. The Marines, he was a Marine communication officer when he was with them, and they talked, and Trey, you might remember this, they talked about messages from the 40s and the 50s that they were picking up. And
yes, that was a fascinating discussion. Where they're picking up messages from 50 years ago.
Right, and Kobe, jot this down, that you and I need to at least have a phone conversation with Ike. He's a very close friend of mine, and we need to see a little bit about what they were doing. He was a communications officer, and learn a little bit more about what they were doing and how the things that you're building could interface with that. So do me a favor and jot down, talk to Ike, and we'll discuss that after the show. Okay?
John.
Okay, great. All right, well, that's good. Well, I tell you what, why don't you go on, because we definitely have a little more time left, and we must be in a very weird thing because it seems like we've been talking for 20 minutes and only 4 minutes has passed. But anyway, why don't you close, because I'd like to have you back to continue this discussion after, you know, after the conference and everything. Why don't you talk about, why don't you talk about Rupert Sheldrake and Arthur Young in radionics? And that would be a good way to close out, you know, kind of put a semicolon in what we're talking about tonight. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's very unfortunate that I'm going to be away from the Ghosts and Aliens next week to be dipping margaritas on the beach. But we do have to continue this wonderful correspondence.
Right. So anyway, tell us a little bit about Rupert R. Sheldrake, one of my heroes, Sir Rupert R. Sheldrake. He was knighted by the Queen. And tell us a little bit about him. And his first book was A New Science of Life, international bestseller.
Yeah, absolutely. My fondness for Sheldrake is I think he's part of this coming paradigm of the hard sciences and metaphysics not being mutually exclusive anymore. Sheldrake is an English biologist. I believe he was a biochemist at Cambridge. And
that's correct.
I think he was affiliated with Harvard after that. So this is a very heady company that we're dealing with. And he has this concept of morphic resonance as a sort of invisible force field that's an influence on biology. And it's very dissonant, and he's been quite segregated from the mainstream scientific community with these ideas of guided and intelligent mutation and evolution, which is completely against the neo-Darwinian paradigm. And I mentioned Sheldrake tonight because of, I believe, his idea of morphogenetic fields and morphic resonance is another parallel to what we're talking about with orgone and Wilhelm Reich as another one of these indescript forces that are simply outside of what our senses happen to be tuned to.
Well,
and,
I guess
you mentioned
it's a lot of research. There's a lot of research that needs to be done, and there aren't too many people doing it because this is not the type of research that is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. They want to count butterflies.
That's right.
That's
I think this is the type of conversation that we should be having in our universities.
In our universities?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Oh, that will never happen. That will never happen.
Yeah, unfortunately.
No, that will never happen because right. I'll never forget playing golf with the past head of the National Science Foundation grants. And I introduced her to Dr. Susan Leavis at Coastal Carolina University, who does a very important research program. And what Susan does is she monitors the Waccamaw River. And that thing can go up and down with floods and everything. That's a very, very important project. No one had ever done it. No one had ever collected data. And Susan was doing a wonderful job. And so this lady asked her, we had a cocktail party after we played golf at the Dunes Club. And this lady who was former head of grants, she said, what are your research hypotheses? And Susan said, well, what I do is I monitor the Waccamaw River, and I try to give flood data, you know, to all of South Carolina about the Waccamaw River because we have so many people that live on the Waccamaw River. We have farmers there. We have fields, and we need to know the flood data. And that's what I collect. I have several computers out and do this. And the lady from the National Science Foundation said, again, what are your research hypotheses? And Susan said, I loved it. Again, I collect data for the state of South Carolina to try to protect people and try to let them know what is going on with the levels of the Waccamaw River as they affect our economy and the people that live here. And the lady from the National Science Foundation just threw up her hands and just walked away, which I thought was very bad behavior from the National Science Foundation. And I said, Susan, I apologize. But, I mean, you know, that's what the National Science Foundation is about. They want a research hypothesis, and they want to count butterflies, pretty much. That's what I have seen. Maybe they have changed, but maybe not. But these are questions that we need to be asking and answering. And Trey Dunaway, I really enjoyed your basic cross-examination of Kobe. I'm going to re-listen to this. And I'm going to go over with Kobe some of the questions that you have because I think they're really important, and I would like for us to see how we can, like, get some good, succinct answers to these questions. I'm like you, Dr. Trey, and you, Kobe, and you, Chris, and you, Robin. I'm about let's get these things answered and let's move forward. It's like, you know, we don't, you know, some of us now – some of the people that are going to be at the North Carolina Bigfoot Conference know about night vision. And, in fact, Missy Hill is going to be there, and she's pretty much an expert on using the night vision, and she knows a lot, so I'm going to try to pick her brain. Robin, I want to introduce you to Missy Hill, and, you know, we can go on from there. But what we're doing is we're opening avenues of exploration for nothing more than research. And I think it's very, very important that we get good, informed folks that are creative, like Kobe, and people with great questions like Dr. Trey and Robin and Chris, and we start answering these questions, get them down on paper so that people can read them and understand the answers. So I hope people do like what we're trying to do, and I think that's a good function for Scarycast because this stuff's great. It's important, and to get somebody as talented as Kobe is, you know, Kobe's 22 years old. He's learned every bit of this by himself. He's, I think, one of the smartest men that I have ever met to be 22 years old, and he knows what he's doing. He really does. And I think he's, you know, he's an admirable performer against a truly tough crowd. In fact, I think one of the finest crowds of questioners that anybody could ever have. So we're going to start trying to – I want to work with him to try to put together more answers so that we can ask more good questions. So I wanted to thank everybody. First of all, Chris Chastain, thank you for being here. We look forward to seeing you this weekend. Chris Chastain.
Yes, sir, me too.
Okay, good. So it'll be your favorite weekend. Robin McCray, keynote speaker
yeah.
with her husband, Pat. We cannot wait to have you there this weekend. It's going to be a blast.
And Kobe, thank you so much for tonight. It was fascinating. I loved it.
Thank you, Kobe.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
Well, good. Dr. Trey Dunaway, thank you for asking great questions and helping us move forward.
I'm happy to be here, John.
Well, great. And Kobe, thanks a lot for being here. We'll talk after the show. And so thanks to everybody. We've had a great Scary Cast. It's been a lot of fun. We've ended up with more questions than answers, which is probably a good thing. So I wanted to say thanks to everybody, and I want everyone to say goodbye.
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 Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Take care.